Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City 88.7 FM with Frances Nesbitt and Mags Morrissey.
Hello and you're very welcome to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. I am Frances Nesbitt from Crowan Cottages here in Kilkenny and I'm joined as usual by Mags Morrissey from Hedgehog Bakery. We're live today, Friday from 4 to 5 and the show is repeated every Monday at the same time from 4 to 5. Now while we're in the studio we would love to hear from you, so please feel free to get in touch with any questions or comments that you might have. The easiest way is probably to drop us a text 086 353 7782 and that'll pop up on the screen here in front of us, 086 353 7782. And a happy new year again to all of you. Mags is just saying that we're well into the year now and the time for saying happy new year is past, but we might say it one more time, happy new year to everybody. And on the show today what we're going to be doing is laying out a bit of a plan for the show for the year ahead, how we'll set up each of our little broadcasts and looking at things that we might do, skills that we might learn in the new year or new pastimes that we might take up. It's a time for planning, I think, really. Not reflection, but planning for the year ahead. And this kind of unseasonably warm weather that we're having makes it feel a little bit like spring here in Kilkenny. Now, on the show a little later on, we're also going to be joined by the author of one of my favourite books from last year, or the compiler maybe I should say, and another gorgeous book for the year ahead, Leah Leendertz, and she's the author of The Almanac for 2019. We'll be talking to her about that, full of brilliant little bits, nuggets of information and things to look out for during the year. And then we'll also be joined by our buddy Hugh Cassidy, Horty Hugo from Twitter and Instagram, and we'll be talking to him about the garden, his garden, his new garden, his plans for 2019 and so on. So that's all to come up, but meanwhile, Mags, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Happy New Year.
Again. Like, what are we on? Day three now, or day four? Where I can't remember what day it is.
I think you're allowed to say it up to the end of the weekend. I think
okay,
after Nolag Naman, isn't that maybe when you should stop? Yeah, it's the fourth today, January.
Yeah,
4th.
Great. Cool. Oh, so far, so good, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Well, the weather's all great anyway.
A little bit chillier today now than it has been but that's probably no harm.
Dry, at least.
It is, actually. Nice and dry. Yeah, so all good out in Thomastown. All survived Christmas.
And everybody
amazing.
Happy.
Everybody happy.
Brilliant, yeah. Brilliant. Yeah. How was that turkey?
Oh, we had a turkey. Yeah, we did. Yeah.
My turkey that I raised, hand-reared, especially for you. It's like the turkey equivalent of Kobe beef. You know, like it was massaged and well-fed every day and exercised and so on.
It was very nice.
Good. Great
I brined
stuff.
It. I probably should have brined it a little bit longer, actually, but with timing, it didn't work out. But brined it and cooked it, as I always do, breast side down and stuff, and it worked out very well. It was lovely. Mm-hmm. And I've got... now, I have to make a confession on the stock. I gave some of the stock to the mothering dog.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I just thought it'd be really good for her.
Okay.
And she liked it.
Yeah, I'm sure she did.
Yeah.
I'm sure she did. Well, she's a nursing mother.
She's a nursing mother and she's been great and stuff.
Seven pups. There's a lot of questions in my house about the pups in your place. I should never have brought the children over to visit.
I'll send you on some photos that'll help.
Oh, God, thank God my daughter doesn't have any way of getting photographs of you. I'd be pestered.
they're beautiful, though, actually.
Yeah,
a
lovely,
friend down from Dublin this morning, and every time anyone comes along, they say, oh, a friend of mine would really like one. So there must be about 20 people actually looking for pups at this stage.
Could you buy in cheap imports and sell them on to people? No, we better not do that.
Are you told you just wouldn't tell them over the radio that you were going to do that? No? So anyway, the turkey was great. I have some in the freezer, and I'm going to do my turkey biryani special one of the evenings next week, probably. So I'll give you that recipe later if you fancy that.
Oh, yeah, it sounds good.
Yeah, lovely flavoured bird. Perfect.
I had somebody asking a question on Twitter, probably the 27th, 28th of December, and they were saying, what am I going to do with the rest of this bloody turkey? Guys, mix up in the butcher and it's huge and da-da-da-da-da. Somebody in the UK, I think. And I said, just slice it up and put it in the freezer. And, you know, you've got sandwich meat then for the coming year. So
or all sorts of things.
Of
yeah, you can put it in a pie after that.
Yeah, absolutely. I have bags of kind of cooking turkey, you know, the browner meat and then...
That's the meat I like, actually, the best.
And the breast meat then sliced up and ready for sandwiches. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. They'll stay in there for a couple of months, snowballing.
Because there's no such thing really as a small turkey. If you want a small turkey, buy a chicken.
Yeah.
So turkeys by their nature are quite sizable.
They are.
So
all big,
if you're not feeding like a huge amount of people, you're going to have some leftover turkey. But that's okay. You might actually have to say probably the best culinary moment of Christmas was the sticky toffee pudding.
Oh.
Yeah. That was
it was a big hit with everybody.
That was a big hit with everyone, and it was such a big hit that I did it for a big gathering on one of the days last week. So we had it twice, actually. And I will give you the recipe if you'd like the recipe for that.
Do. And if I'm putting up a podcast of the show, I might list the recipe on that. If you email it on to me, will you do that?
Okay. And it's really easy.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah, I like easy recipes.
You need 170 grams of dates chopped up, half a pint of boiling water, teaspoon of bread soda, 150 grams of butter, 175 grams of soft brown sugar, 2 eggs, 170 grams of self-raising flour, and a half a teaspoon of vanilla essence. So basically, pour your water over the dates, pop them on to boil. Once they've come to the boil, take them off, add the bread soda, and you'll see it all fizzing and kind of bubbling up when you do that, and kind of the colour changes a little bit. Leave that to cool.
Oh, I know a young chef now who'd love to be involved in that kind of stuff. That sounds a bit sciencey in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But not too overly complicated either. Meanwhile, cream your butter and sugar until they're really nice and pale. Add your eggs to that. Add your flour and your vanilla, and then stir in your date mixture. And then put it into a kind of a butter tin, or if you want to put it into a nice dish, you can serve it from the straight to the table from the dish, and into the oven 180 for about 45 minutes or thereabouts, maybe a little bit less. It's fabulous. It's got a fabulous flavour. It's really moist and stuff, and it's a warm pudding. You know, I did it at Christmas because my children don't like Christmas pudding, so it was kind of like an alternative warm pudding on the day.
And how do you serve your sticky toffee pudding? What do you serve it with?
With butterscotch sauce.
That's the tradition, really, isn't it?
And that is really easy. So for that, you need 140 grams of soft brown sugar, 6 tablespoons of cream, and 113 grams of butter.
So cream, butter, and sugar.
Okay. Yeah, all into a saucepan, and heat them up, and that'll all bubble up, and that, don't let it burn and stuff. You need.
Now that's kind of important, isn't it? Because you can never get rid of that smell of burnt sugar once you get it.
No, but that doesn't seem to be too difficult, actually, because I've made it a few times. So, just you want the sugar to have dissolved, so you don't have grains of sugar in it. And once that's done, it's fine, and that'll keep. You can pour it on hot, and obviously you have to have cream with that as well. So you have sauce and cream, and it's a really nice pudding. Everyone loved it. It got loads of praise, and which is nice.
That sounds kind of easy as well.
It's very straightforward.
Sounds lovely.
Yeah. And you can, that sauce then, the butter, you can just like pour it in a jar and keep it, and it keeps for ages and stuff, so much sugar in it, and you can use it, well, you could just spoon it into yourself if you fancied it, or heat it up again and stuff and pour it on something the following day.
It's funny, sugar's such a good preservative, people kind of forget, you know, you see meringues kicking around the place for weeks and months and
no bother
on them, you know.
True.
But also with the butterscotch sauce, I love sticky toffee pudding, I haven't had it in so long. But right, you give me that recipe. I'll get it up on the with the podcast on thekitchengarden.ie. People can have a look at it there and print it off, and I'll make that sometime next week. Now, that sounds very good.
Yeah, it's really good. And that recipe came from the hotel in Scotland that developed it.
Oh, wow.
So there you go. Yeah.
Oh, so that's where it's a Scottish dessert.
Yeah,
that's where
it is. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's funny, I'd never made it before. If I was out, I have had it a couple of times out because I quite like it, but I always thought it was something complicated. But it's not. That's how easy it is.
I haven't even seen it on a menu now in a very long time. No, that sounds good.
Yeah.
And New Year, did you do your traditional kind of lentil feast on the first? You were telling us last year the lentils all signify coins and wealth for the coming year.
Yeah,
and so on.
And good luck and that. Well, I did it last night, so I had lentil curry last night. It's
a bit late, so maybe you'll get your good luck towards the end of the year.
Maybe, I don't know. My kids dread lentils. It's always like, oh, please tell me there's no lentils in that. So it was last night, but anyway, should hope for the best. I'm not sure that lentils will make or break my year.
I did a goose for New Year, New Year's Day. Not one of yours and not one I raised myself, but I love the idea of goose. And then you go ahead and make it, and it's fairly involved. There's a lot of hassle to it. A lot of fat comes out of a goose. You have to drain it off.
Depends on how old the goose is.
Yeah, well, even a young goose, I find, puts down a lot of fat before they put down meat. There isn't a huge amount of meat on a bird either. Now, it's plenty for 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 even, but thereafter you wouldn't feed a crowd. I don't know, it's just... it'll be a while before I do one again, shall we say. You know, it's a lot of hassle for what you get, I think.
Yeah, it's a very nice meat, though. Mm. One of my favourite meats.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. But I haven't had it for like a year.
But you see, that's the way I was thinking as well. I think if you were to go and cook one now, you'd be a bit disappointed, and then you'd leave it a year and you'd forget your disappointment and have it again.
I loved it the last time I had it. And I have two ready for the chop. They kind of got saved for Christmas, so they need to go in the new year.
They're going to be big birds now.
Yeah, well, two of them were suitable. The others are the really contrary ones. Like, he's no better this year, to be honest. He's like an antichrist around the place. He hasn't made any resolutions. He's just going to be the same as he always was.
But after a certain amount of time, you might want to hang that bird or something, would you? It would be quite gamey. Or...
Oh, you wouldn't eat him, I don't think. Like, I can't imagine. You'd say he'd be choke on him anyway, because of his attitude.
It's a bit bitter. Okay, right, I see. Well, I had goose anyway for New Year's, and it was lovely, and invented a couple of nice dishes to go along with it. You know what I had, actually?
What did celeriac, you have with it?
I had celeriac and potato boulangère. So it's like a gratin, but made with stock instead of cream.
Yeah.
And that's lovely. And whatever's left over from that, then it's very easy to turn that into a stock. If you, like, I had it again the next day, but if there's any leftovers, it's very easy to turn it into a soup. Sorry. And what I really wanted to have was red cabbage. I really wanted to have some red cabbage cooked.
Yeah, it's very good with goose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Couldn't find any anywhere.
I was at home.
Oh, I was in and out of I don't know how many supermarkets. Could not find a red cabbage.
The veg shop up in John's Green, they had them.
That's a lovely little shop.
That's where I
actually
got them, actually.
Yeah, that's the place to go. And that nice little. And actually, we should really support any of those little independent shops like greengrocers and butchers and so on if we can. But I wasn't anywhere near it. I tried numerous places, couldn't find a red cabbage.
That's a pity.
I had green instead.
Green with cabbage.
Nice.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
It was nice.
Yeah.
I like to cook it the Ballymaloe way. So in butter and a little bit of water in a frying pan with a lid.
Yeah.
Just 6 or 7 minutes, 8 minutes maybe. And you have it kind of chopped up before it goes into
nicely
the pan.
Nicely sliced, kind of.
Nicely sliced. And it goes into the pan. Give it a coat of that butter and water mix, so the butter is kind of melted in with a bit of water in the pan. Make sure all of the leaves have a coating on that, and then leave it to steam.
And a little sprinkle of salt.
Little sprinkle of salt, yeah. 7, 8 minutes, and that's it. Like, it's delicious. Still tastes like of that. Cabbage. Still has a bit of body to it and bite. First had it like that down in Ballymaloe. Loved
goose
it.
And cabbage.
Mm. So I don't know what that means now for the year ahead. Prosperity, miserableness. I don't know. I didn't have any lentils. I haven't had any lentils yet. But
I think I wouldn't worry too much. I don't think I'd dwell on it for too long, actually.
Did you get any nice presents for the kitchen or garden?
Yes. I got a pot for the garden, actually.
A flower pot?
Small boy, yeah.
Oh, very good.
I got a set of whisks for the kitchen. I love when your children like hear you say something like, oh, I wish I had a small whisk. And then lo and behold, you get a whole set of little whisks.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Like when they store stuff away and you get actual useful stuff, that's good. That's good.
So yeah, lovely presents.
Excellent. Brilliant.
Yeah.
I got a couple of tools myself, which I'm a sucker for the old tools. The boy knows I love them. So I got a couple of nice tools for the outside that I'm looking forward to using. And it's been kind of mild enough to be out and about doing stuff outside.
It has indeed.
Mm. Now, this year on the show, so plans for the year ahead. We were talking about getting as many guests on as we possibly can, local as well as from far afield. So if you've any suggestions for people you'd like us to have a chat with on the show, authors of decent books for the kitchen or the garden, just drop us a text or give us an email to kitchengarden@ckc.ie. That's kitchengarden@ckc.ie, and we'll stick those on the list.
Or if anybody had anything absolutely extraordinary in their garden or their kitchen or something that they want to show us.
Yeah, that'd be
cool.
Great.
We'd
I'd really like that.
Yeah.
Drop us a text, send us a picture, or on Twitter. You can reach me at Nesbitt F or Mags at Mags Morrissey. Or drop us an email, and we'd only be too happy to feature it on the show. And then I'd like to get out and about a bit more. I'd like to, last year we did some lovely kitchen, some garden visits, but I'd like to do some more of our nature notes from out and about if we could. So I love hearing about the birds and all of that kind of stuff, but wouldn't it be nice to go see them in places like the murmuration that's going on in Leash at the moment.
Yeah.
You've heard about that?
Yes, yes.
I know you have, because you told me about it.
I'm actually going that direction tomorrow evening, so I might see if I can see it. Although I can imagine it's, you know, not the most predictable thing to go looking for, to go visit. But anyway, it's been around for about a week and stuff, and it looks absolutely enormous. I saw it on social media, I think it was on Twitter. It was a guy shared it. So it looks like, I know murmurations can be up to like 500,000 birds and that. This one looks like a good few 100,000.
And it looks like a cloud. It's like a cloud of birds that changes in its kind of intensity as they swirl around in the sky together.
But in a shape, so in kind of a fluid shape.
Yeah.
So the shape will change in that, but they will all move together, you know, to the left or to the right or up or down. So I've never seen one like that, a huge one in real, so it would be cool to see it actually.
I'd love to go to see that.
Yeah.
And one of the things you mentioned several times last year was visiting the birds down on the slobs in Wexford. Now I'd like to do that as well before they all fly off back to wherever they go during the summer.
Clock is on now.
Yeah, while it's packed during the winter, pay a visit down there. One of these like dry, bright kind of days would be fantastic for that.
And I think actually January is a nice time to do things and stuff because it can be a dark time and Christmas is over and all the rest and stuff. So I think pack January with all sorts of, doesn't have to be expensive things, but all sorts of outdoor things that you can do and keep yourselves busy.
Mm. Speaking of which, for the year ahead, have you any plans for things you're going to learn or sign up for or do?
I'm going to do a bread class actually.
You're going to you're going to learn how to make bread yourself?
I'm going to advance my own skills.
Oh,
so, yeah.
Very good.
I'm going to go to the UK for a couple of days to do a class.
Brilliant. Well, look, you might tell us about that after the ad break, will you? Actually, after the ads, we'll talk to, we'll give Leah a ring about the Almanac, and then you can tell us about the plans for that and other things that people can kind of do later in the year. So we're going to take a quick ad break. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us. The easiest way is by text 086-353-7782, or you can drop us an email, kitchengarden@crkc.ie. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Text us on 086-353-7782.
Kitchen Garden is sponsored by the Artisan Food Retailers of Kilkenny.
And you're very welcome back to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. I'm Francis Nesbitt and I'm joined as usual by Mags Morrissey. And we're live today, Friday from 4 to 5. Happy New Year to you all. And on Monday the show is repeated from 4 to 5 also. While we're in the studio, the easiest way to get in touch is to drop us a text, as I said, 086-353-7782. There's a couple of texts in there. One has me a little perplexed actually. Apparently at this time of the year, so over the last 2 days, the Earth has been at its closest to the sun that it will be all year. Now, I need to think about that because it's winter. Are we tilted away from it? Anyway, I'll have a think about that one, but thanks very much for texting that into us. But I am delighted to say that we're joined on the line now by the compiler, editor of the Almanac, a seasonal guide to 2019. Leah Leendertz, are you there?
Hello, yes.
Hi, Leah, how are you?
I'm all right, and I know what you were talking about, actually, about the sun being at its closest.
I was hoping you might.
It's called perihelion, and it's nothing to do particularly with it being winter or summer or whatever, but it's just that in our orbit, it's not a perfect orbit of the sun, and this is just, I think it was yesterday, is just the point at which we are at our closest to the sun. And then we're our furthest away, oddly, a moment in June, I think it is, or July. So, yes, it doesn't go with the seasons particularly, it just happens to be that this is when we're at our closest.
Now, you see, I love knowing little bits of useless information like that. And I have to say, I'm flicking through the book here to see where it's mentioned.
It's full of it.
But the almanac last year and this year is full of nuggets like that. It really is.
That's the idea.
Plenty of mentions during the year on our show, I have to say, as
Thank
I was flicking
you.
Through.
Thank you very much.
So we really enjoyed it last year. And this year, can you tell us what's different about this year, or is it more of the same?
Yeah. Well, what I aimed for, and what I'm going to aim for future editions, because I know that there's going to be future editions now, is sort of 50-50. So all the bones of it, which is all of the tables, so sunrise and sunset tables, moonrise, all the sky at night stuff, you know, all the things that kind of make it a proper annual almanac will stay the same, but obviously be slightly different because each year it's slightly different. Mm-hmm. And then that just sort of gives me a chance to mess around with the other things. So a couple of the things that are different this year is I've added in a kind of a folk story or a religious story for each month. So for January, we've actually got a Rastafari story, so the story of Epiphany, kind of as told by the Rastas, you know, what Epiphany means to Rastafarians. We've also got the naming of the month. So I looked at all of the different languages of the British Isles and what each month is called in each of those languages. So some of them are really, you know, tiny languages that hardly used anymore, but they've all kind of got little links back into the past. So a lot of them are quite agricultural, talking about harvest and sowing and all of this sort of thing. So I've looked at that. So looked at Scots Gaelic and Irish Gaelic, Manx, Welsh, Cornish, Gerier, which is the Jersey language as well.
I had never heard of Gerier.
No, yes, I think it's very small, but it's still interesting because obviously they lean towards France. A lot mm-hmm. of the names are very like the French, but that's also interesting that the Cornish, which, you know, it's sort of between Cornwall and France, Cornish actually is much closer linked to Breton than it is to either French or sort of more Celtic languages. So it's really interesting kind of stuff going on.
That's fantastic.
So that was really fun to research.
I'm sure it was. And I'm sure when you look back on some of those older languages, the names of the months are more reminders of things to do at that time of the year.
Yeah, and these little hints. So we've got from Scots Gaelic, is full, hang on, let me get the pronunciation, Fuloch, sorry, is January. And that actually comes from Ful Chu, which means wolf. So it's the wolf month. So that kind of, obviously, there's not been any wolves in Scotland for hundreds of years now, but that's where the name for the month comes from, is that this would have been a time when wolves were particularly vocal. They were, you know, if they were meeting their mates, they were making a lot of noise. So January was the wolf month, but, you know, clearly that's gone now, but it's so evocative of what January's would have been like.
Well, I think anybody who lives in the countryside and is familiar with that time of the year when the foxes are making, the dog foxes are barking, and over here there were lots and lots of traditions or myths attached to that, and some say that the banshee sound, which is supposed to come when a death is due in the house, was actually the fox barking away in the field.
Right.
We'd understand that here, that a wolf calling would be very evocative. All right. And you're sticking as well then with the kind of gluts of the month and a recipe or two that we can enjoy during the year.
Yes, I've gone for that again. So within the gardening section, I've got gluts of the month just because I think that's so helpful to me. So the idea really is that these are not full recipes. They are really just sort of little suggestions, really, ideas that, you know, if you've got, so for January, it's kale. Obviously, if you grow vegetables, you're quite likely to have a bit of kale at least, just about sticking it out on the vegetable plot now. Mm. So just three ideas, like I say, not proper recipes. So crispy seaweed, shredding up kale, making it completely dry, then deep frying it, sprinkling with sugar, salt, and Chinese five spice powder is how you make the crispy seaweed that you can buy in Chinese takeaways. Bubble and Squeak, of course, little how-to on Bubble and Squeak. And then making a raw kale and walnut pesto. So whizzing up kale with toasted walnuts and parmesan olive oil to stir into pasta. So it's just these little ideas rather than full recipes. And then I do have full recipes each month, which are either sort of seasonal, you know, what's in season this month, or they're related to particular festivities that are happening each month. So for January, we've got an Epiphany tart, which is an old English tradition, actually, dating back to the 1600s, which was of creating tarts topped with intricate pastry patterns. And for Epiphany, they would make them with 13 wells. And the idea was that you were supposed to use 13 different jams, if you had those in your larder, and they are representing, you know, one for each of the disciples and one for Jesus.
No, I see.
The idea there. And then also got Cullen Skink in January, which is for Burns Night, which is coming up on the 25th of January. Delicious Scottish fish broth.
Now, one of the things I tried to do, Leah, in 2018 was pay attention to the gardening by the moon. I have to admit, I wasn't strict. I wasn't strict with it. But if there were a couple of jobs to do in the garden, I did try to order them so that I was somewhat meeting the calendar that was there. And that's something that gets mentioned in 2019 again, isn't it?
It does, yes. I've put it in, not particularly because I do this myself, simply because I'm too disorganized to, you know, something. If I've got time to do something and, you know, it's the right time of year, then that's when I do it. But just because people were so interested in it. And when I first, you know from last year that when I first set out to write the first almanac, it was crowdfunded. And so I had lots and lots of feedback from people, and lots of people, even though when I'd never mentioned Garden by the Moon when I first set out to do it. Loads of people saying to me, oh, I'm really looking forward to getting the Gardening by the Moon date. And I thought, okay, this is clearly a thing that people are interested in.
Yeah.
So I'm not particularly making any great claim for it. I don't do it myself. And, you know, I'm trying to keep the almanac as sort of scientific as possible. But there are good arguments for it, and a lot of people really swear by it. So if you want the dates, they're in it, you know, you can give it a try.
The theory behind it has to do with water movements, isn't that right?
That's right. So we know, obviously, that the moon affects gravity. It is a big pull on the Earth, and it moves the tides and all this stuff. So when you have, and the sun as well, so when you have the sun and the moon lined up in a line, so that is in at the new moon and at the full moon, they are in a line. You've got a particularly strong pull of gravity, and you get the biggest tides of the month, the spring tides at that point. So really, it's about applying that idea to smaller bodies of water, which seems perfectly reasonable to me. So, you know, if it can pull the seas out of shape, then surely it can pull a tiny bit of water that's in a plant. So you would sort of avoid pruning at a time of this high gravity because you've got lots more sap and sort of thing going, but you would perhaps sow because groundwater might be higher. So yes, there's more to it than that, but that's essentially the idea. It's about the movement of the groundwater itself and also the small amounts of water within each plant.
Well, I'm going to pay attention to it again in 2019. And hopefully,
good for you. I'm going to try.
Hopefully, I'll be a bit more organized this year than I was last year. But I just seem to be chasing my tail a lot in 2018. But look, having a calendar in front of me might help. Well, beautiful illustrations again as last year. Is it the same illustrator?
No. So one of the things that I and the designer, Matt Cox, decided right at the start was that in order to partly to, you know, make it different each time, to make it feel like a kind of collectible item, and also to give different artists an opportunity to sort of see how they would illustrate the year, that we would have a different illustrator every year. So the format and the look and the lettering and all of that will stay the same, and a different artist will come in each year and do their thing. So yeah, this year we've got Celia Hart, who is a printmaker. She has done absolutely beautiful atmospheric pictures as chapter openers for each month, and also for the ID pages, and obviously the lovely cover as well. What Celia is really good at is she spends a lot of time in nature anyway. She goes for lots of walks, and is just, you know, very sort of deeply in the nature, and was really good at capturing the time of year. When I looked at her work that she'd done before starting work on the almanac, for each picture I could kind of tell what month it was. Yeah. She'd done it, oh, like that's May, and okay, that's definitely August, and you know, it just had that atmosphere, and I think that's what she's really done.
Well, she's done a fabulous job on the cover for this year's almanac. Yeah. So the almanac, A Seasonal Guide to 2019 by Leah Leendertz, and with beautiful illustrations and an absolutely gorgeous cover. It's available in most of the bookshops in Kilkenny, although when I looked today it's sold out in the book centre. It's around about €10, and its compiler, editor and author, Leah, thank you very much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you so much.
Really love that book, actually, and I did refer to it every month of last year, so I plan on doing the same for this year. Full of those little nuggets that I like
to... interesting stuff, isn't it?
It is. It's very, very, very good. Now, we were talking about beforehand, you're going to go off and advance your skills as a baker, but it is a great time of the year to kind of take on one of those resolutions to improve yourself.
Improve oneself.
Yeah. Yes,
distract oneself from everything as well. So yeah, I think it's always good to do new things and have a bit of a plan.
Mm.
I never think January is a time to be like harsh on yourself. I always think it's a time to actually do something nice and just keep life as easy as possible.
So, do you know, I'm kind of coming around to your way of thoughts. I remember you saying that last year, and we had a bit of an argument in the show about a lot of people kind of improving themselves, abstaining in January, trying to get the Christmas weight down or whatever. But it is a fairly bleak time of the year.
And I think instead of abstaining, take on to do something. So walk more or exercise more or something. That's perfectly well, but not kind of, you know, making life a little bit more difficult than it might be in January anyway. Be nice to yourself.
Well, I think that's a nice way of looking at it. And what can people kind of take on for themselves then in the new year? Did you have a look at any of these?
A new interest, I think, is a great thing to do.
Yeah.
And I know I'm always rabbiting on about the birdies and stuff like that, but Birdwatch Ireland, join them, €50. And you can become a member, and you'll get a lovely magazine, and you'll be part of that community. You can go, you can join. There's different groups, different counties in the country and stuff. Leash seems to have a really good, actually, branch. And there is a branch in Kilkenny as well. And another interest, and what better than watching birds, particularly at this time of the year, from your kitchen or through the window or whatever, but a little bit of knowledge and talking to people who have a similar interest and stuff is a really nice thing to do.
That's a brilliant idea. And as part of your membership then, what do you receive?
You get the magazines, so you get constant updates and that, and there's really good information in the magazines. If you have a little bit of knowledge, then you can just expand it, and you kind of, I suppose, feel that you're doing something positive, so you're part of a reasonable cause, and they do great work, as we'll be talking about the Barn Owls later in that. And another thing is, like, there's a flower club in Kilkenny, so you could join that if you wanted to learn how to do flower arranging, or the RHS,
Royal Horticultural Society
and stuff. You can join them. They've got branches all over the country, so you can join that for a small amount of money, and so there you go, a couple of new interests.
They have they host a lot of really interesting talks throughout the year and garden visits and stuff. So while you might think that you'll get around to doing certain things during the year, I suppose if you're a member of a club or a society like that where the events are organised for you, all you have to do is kind of tag along.
Yeah, you're more likely to do it,
much,
I think, if you
likely.
Join in that and you're part of it. So,
One of the things I'd like us to do this year, if you could, I used to have a social calendar where time flies by. Like, it's we're 15 months at the show now. It's hard to believe. And every now and again, every 3 months or so, I'd take out this calendar and I'd send text messages to people and I'd say, do you want to have dinner in 3 months? And it would go into the calendar. People thought it was a bit mad, but when it was in the calendar, it was more likely to happen.
Planning. I like planning.
Yeah. I'd like that too. So maybe if once a month, or once a season even, if we picked a few things that we could kind of do during that season, or gardens that we could go visit, or dishes that we could cook, that'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would.
Okay,
yeah.
Great. Well, let's do that.
Make a plan
and stick to it. Mm. Right, now, we better take another ad break. And then coming up after the ads, we're going to be talking to our buddy Hugh Cassidy about gardening, what's going on in the garden at the moment, and what he's looking forward to in the year ahead. We'll be back in a couple of minutes just after these. Text us on 086 353 7782.
Kitchen Garden is sponsored by the Artisan Food Retailers of Kilkenny.
And you're very welcome back to The Kitchen Garden. I'm Francis Nesbitt and I'm here as usual with Mags Morrissey, and we're live today, Friday, from 4 to 5. So you still have time to send us in any questions or comments that you might have, and thanks to those who have already gotten in touch. After we talk to Hugh, I'll go through some of those texts. You can get in touch with us by text to 086 353 7782, or email kitchengarden@crkc.ie. And as we were saying earlier in the show, we'd love to hear any comments or suggestions that you have for the show for the year ahead. The easiest way to send those into us at this stage now may be by email kitchengarden@crkc.ie. But it being a new year, it time, at least for me, my thoughts turn to the garden, and as the evenings begin to draw out, I'm tempted already to be sowing some seeds and thinking about getting outside and growing some food. And one of the people I love to follow, one of the gardeners I love to follow on social media online, is Hugh Cassidy up in North County Dublin. Hugh is on the phone with us now. Hi, Hugh.
How's it going? How are you?
Good. Did you have a nice Christmas?
It was lovely.
Excellent.
It wasn't as because our kids are all grown up, we didn't have all the presents scattered all over the floor with lots of wrapping paper, so that was really nice. It was just a lot more mellow.
No stepping on bits of Lego.
Oh, it's brilliant. After 20 long years of doing that, fantastic not to do it anymore.
Although I have to say, there's a man I know here in Kilkenny in his 40s, and he bought himself a Lego, or he got a gift of a Lego Technics kit, the exact same one as my 12-year-old son. Gosh. So, yeah, that was by choice. But did you get any gardening done?
Come here. You know, I moved house there in October time. So for me, it was very much around obviously moving all the utensils of the house, you know, the practical piece. And then obviously my focus was on the garden. And as we were making plans, you see what yourself and Mags were talking about, all the planning there for the year. As Ashton was planning, you know, the house move and whatever, I was sitting down planning the garden move because I didn't really care about the house stuff. I was like, I can't get my glass house moved. And I want to take these particular pots and containers with me. So it's been great now to settle in December. And very much my focus now is, you know, spring is ahead of us, and it is a couple of months away, really. But there's a lot of groundwork we can do at this time of year just to be prepared, you know, and it can save time and save stress. When you're talking about, you see the way you're saying about the, you know, the yield is getting longer and attempt to go out and sow seed. I would encourage people to just enjoy that feeling, but don't. just wait. Just enjoy the waiting and get cleaning, get tidying, get into those groovy corners that we haven't been in, and just clear them out. You know, just enjoy this peaceful time of year. Listen to the birds and the murmurations like you were talking about earlier, you know?
What I love about the Christmas holidays is that my phone goes quiet. Very few people are phoning me about websites or cottages or courses or any of that kind of stuff. Yeah. And it means that there's a bit of relaxation. During the summer, when we should really be enjoying our gardens, I can almost hear the weeds growing. So there's very little relaxing about it, because there always seems to be something to do. At this time of the year, if you get out to the garden and you do a bit of a tidy like that, you don't turn around to hire weeds behind you. I think that's a great tip.
And that's it. It's just a gift for us at this time of year to just slow down, you know, a little bit of mulling over how did 2018 work out for us and what's 2019 ahead of us. Last time we were talking, we were saying, you know, we missed out the spring because you remember we had that very cold bit of weather at the end of February, early March. And then we had another belt of it just at the end of March, start of April. So we were trying to kickstart ahead. So nearly a continuation of that conversation is now, you know, if we are going to have a mildish winter, that's great. Do that prep work and we can get in early for our seed sowing, you know, middle or the end of February for the earliest stuff, and then it'll just skyrocket from there.
Well, it has been very, very mild. I'm still cutting grass on days where there's no frost and feeding it up to the animals. They love it. They'd rather leave the hay behind and eat something green. Of course, I'm not doing it now where if there was a frost forecast, it wouldn't be great for the grass, but there is still growth out there.
Yeah, and I think any time we're talking about gardening tasks at this time of year, you hit the nail on the head. You know, where we have the extremes of weather, you know, the extreme cold, where it's frosty or the ground is extremely wet. You know, don't do anything. Stay off the garden. Stay away from those particular pieces. But otherwise, you can go out and you can be working away. You can get some of those perennial weeds stuck up if you found scutch grass through, you know, your perennial beds, you know, your veg beds. You can get them manured or dug over. You know, there's lots and lots you can actually be doing, but I'll make sure the weather's, you know, make sure the ground isn't sodden wet and make sure the weather's somewhere right, both for ourselves and for the garden themselves.
Yeah.
You think, Francis, do you think that we need a cold spell?
Do I think we'd need one?
Yeah, you know, I see on social media a lot of people going, no, we need a hard frost. We need a week of hard frost.
God, I don't know about that. I could do without it anyway. Whether the garden could do it to get rid of a few pests, I'm not sure, but I know I wouldn't miss it.
Plants needed, though, to set off the next stage. Hugh, don't some plants need a hard, cold weather?
Some do. But you know what? Wouldn't it be interesting to see, after such a cold spell that we had so late in the spring, to see how the how nature responds to just that bit of moisture. I'm not saying we're not going to get frost, because we are, because we're coming in really what is going to be our coldest time. But it would be very interesting to see. There's a lot of ladybirds out. If there's ladybirds out, it means that there's food for them around.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Like that, you look, you see there's green fly, and there's various caterpillars eating plants as well. So it's quite interesting just to see what's going on out there at the moment. I'm always tempted at this time of year to jump into you know, the bed where, say, lupins are growing and delphiniums are growing, and, you know, all the ones that come up during the year and die back down. But I'm really sort of holding back a little bit, because a lot of the lower foliage that's there, a lot of the growth that's there, is actually keeping a lot of the beneficial insects some way insulated during what will be the colder winter night. So I'm just holding back just a little bit at the moment.
So you've a new garden to lay out. That's fairly exciting.
Oh, it's brilliant, isn't it? It's brilliant. I'll miss the old one. There's no doubt about it. I had great joy with the old one. I would spend, like, it was my hobby and my getaway, and where I wanted to just sit and do nothing.
And very popular photographs, very popular with lots of people on Twitter.
Smashing. It's smashing. But like that, it's nice to be moving on. Yeah. I've known for a year, I suppose. I only broke it a few weeks before I actually moved, but I've known it for a year. So I couldn't really be more progressive. You know, I knew that any plants that I had, I couldn't do any more. I couldn't go and buy any more plants, basically.
No room left.
Well, I knew I'd have to move them after.
Yes.
So it was like, no, it was to hold that. I have my allotment, of course, where I could move a lot of the excess stuff and anything that was valuable through the year. I could actually plant those over there. So now I'm back in the new garden. The glasshouse is now up. Sort of the staging or display area is back up. The sowing area where my seed trays are going to go, that's all prepared. So I'm quite happy. I did actually, because I was moving... and I'm late with my garlic. I did actually pop my garlic cloves into some pots, because normally I'd have those done in November-ish time, but it's not going to make a huge amount of difference because the weather has been so mild, you know, and there's still plenty of time for that. And that's what Mags was saying earlier, that bit of cold spell. The garlic needs cold for the bulbs to split, you know, to make the cloves and that sort of thing. So plenty of time yet, I think, for those.
I think you're absolutely right. The old tradition for some of the onions and garlic was plant them on the shortest day and harvest on the longest. So we're not that far beyond the 21st of December if somebody still has garlic that they want to get into the ground.
No, exactly. And even broad beans, Francis. Mm. I mean, now, mine, is, like, they're in the glasshouse, which is in a cooler spot, so it's not going to heat up. It's not going to have the extremes of heat and then cold. Mm. It's in a cooler spot, so I don't want things that are going to be leggy and very fast growing. But you know, those sweet pea, I'm such a great fan of sweet peas, you know, I'm always photographing it out, looking at them. Again, I was tempted to put some in this week, like you were saying earlier on, just to get sown, but I'm going to hold off another month or so. But there's a space ready for them there. I do have a little heated propagator, so for my earliest tomatoes, I'll be doing those first or second week of February. But like that, sometimes the later sowings are stronger plants because it's the baby, the younger ones, you know?
Yeah, it's true.
But again,
now, our friend, a man that you'd know as well, Tongi Totole in Durham County Leash, he's a huge believer in the chili seeds and the tomato seeds 1st of January. They have to get sown.
Which is great, because I'm like, no, you need to sow your onion seeds now. Clear that space away. The chilies are fine now next month. You actually need to get your onion seeds in now. Any of your bedpicture varieties or anything, if you want decent onions from seed, it's actually this week or these couple of weeks that you actually have to sow them.
Yeah.
Did you do any chilies last year, and did they work out for you?
It wasn't a great year, but I didn't mind so much because I had such a huge harvest in 2017 that I still have dried chilies, hung chilies, pickled chilies. I've chilies everywhere. So I didn't sow too many in 2018. I got a few unusual varieties from the aforementioned Tongi in Leash add to my seed bank. So this year, now that stocks are getting lower, I might start sowing again back to the 12 or 13 varieties that I had before.
Yeah, well, come here, that sounds 12 or 13 that you had, that's for a couple of years ago. Do you remember that? The glass, yeah, that's...
I went and I
sold, now, again, with the tomatoes, so I sold some chilies, you know, as I do. And I was like, I wonder how they do, because they never do for me. And I remember a couple of years ago looking at your 12 or 13 varieties going, oh my goodness, I want some of that. And it would never work out, particularly because I don't like the hotter ones. I like the sweet peppers sort of thing, you know. And then in the autumn time, I look back through my social media. It's like all these pictures of wonderful peppers that I've grown. I'm like, jeepers, I'm a great grower. Look how much I've come out in 2 years. Oh, my wonderful looking. And it's actually due to the weather, wasn't it?
Well, it was a fabulous year for them. They loved the heat, as did the flowers out in the garden as well. So it was a lovely year for them. But Hugh, we're running out of time here. I tell you, I'd love to have yourself and Tongi in someday and have a chat in here. His precise and your more laid back philosophy in the garden. Counterpointing each other would be great, I think.
It's great. Come here, when you're doing you're planning those garden visit dates, because I always get caught out with friends and garden visits because I plan my year literally 2 and 3 months in advance. So when you're doing some of those garden visits and that sort of thing, will you give us a wee bell or a wee shout to let us know?
I will.
Yeah, that'd be great.
We'll give you some advance notice, actually, because, maybe we could elbow in on the RHS market where they're organising their garden visits. We could tell people we were doing ours as well. And if we tell people we're doing them, should we have to go along and actually do it then?
We'd be committed then, wouldn't we?
Exactly that. Well, listen, have a great year, Hugh, and we'll talk to you again, I hope, several times during the year. And in the new garden, the best of luck with the plans and the planting.
All the very best.
Thanks.
Good luck to you. Bye.
Exciting times with a new garden, laying it out and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that is cool, isn't it?
You know, a blank kind of canvas to get going on. And Hugh, I should have mentioned, of course, takes fabulous photographs and a very entertaining and engaging man to follow on social media. If you're on Twitter, I'd highly recommend you give Hugh a follow at Hugh_Cassidy, CASSIDY. And on Instagram, Hugh.Cassidy, CASSIDY. I'd strongly recommend a follow for Hugh on both of those channels, because beautiful photographs and a very engaging man. If you ask a question, he's always very good at coming back with an answer, and he has a huge following there. If he doesn't know, he's more than willing to kind of put the question out to everybody else. Now, plans for your garden, Max. What are the plans for the year ahead?
More flowers. Well, I've actually I put down about 120 tulips in the autumn. So, and they've just broken through. And I have all my sweet peas in the conservatory ready to go out. Well, not for another while and stuff, but they're quite substantial now. So yeah. I should have good sweet peas this year. And I did grow a couple of other flowers that I have to keep reminding myself to water, because you don't think of watering this time of the year, but they're in, so they need not very much, but a little bit. More flowers, and
you've got the garden fenced off now, don't you?
Yeah, so it's the easier. Only everything is grown within the fence, because growing anything like with hens and geese is just like kind of a bit too difficult. So and I've kept some seeds from this year and stuff from a lot of the flowers, like the sunflowers, lupins, and so more flowers, really. Well, I'm going to do the same. My veg worked out quite well last year. Yeah. I'm still harvesting lettuce, little turnips, and beetroot. I would have cooked beetroot last week and stuff from the garden. So I was pleased enough with actually last year's, in spite of the difficult weather in some ways. My challenge is always keep the place tidy. But sure. Yeah.
Everybody was talking about how it was a gorgeous summer last year, and it was. The weather was absolutely fabulous. But every year brings its own challenges.
It does, yeah.
And all of that heat brought with it drought, and then there was an awful lot of water to carry to plants. And I did feel sorry again last year for the people who start out for the first time, and they put in their seeds and they see the plants beginning to grow, and then they go on holidays and they come back and everything is dead or something. Yeah. You know, you feel for people like that.
Carrots just didn't grow last year, and it's a thing you might start with, and that mine were about 2 inches long, I suppose, and after months and months and months, so that just didn't work.
But it is the time to kind of like get thinking about your plans, and we might look at next week in a bit more detail about kind of the times of the year and seeds and catalogues and all of that. But nature notes, we have a lovely focus every week on some element of our natural environment, and you did some research for us on barn owls.
Well, I was driving home the other evening, I don't know, 6 or 7 o'clock in the evening, and the barn owl just flew across in front of the car, and it's always special when you see one. I don't see one, I've seen them the odd time and that, and do see them near me, but they are quite special. And then when I looked it up, they are quite special, because there's only about 130 pairs in the country.
Oh no.
Well, that was in the last research project that was done back in the mid-90s. That was the result, which I was quite shocked at, actually.
That is
shocking. More than that, yeah.
Really?
But there's huge projects going on at the moment to check that figure to see if that's right. But
four also, pairs per county.
Yeah, but they're not in every county, so... Right. But they're in most counties, but not in the northwest. They're not really that plentiful over there. There's the projects that are going on at the moment then are looking kind of at the ecological requirements of them, the habitats, and also the effect of rodenticides. Oh. So secondary poisoning is one of the problems. And there's also a new project assessing the impact of the major road projects on barn owls. And that's been done by the Parks and Wildlife and in conjunction with Birdwatch Ireland. And
do they get clipped by traffic?
I would think, now the research only started and stuff, but I would think it's got to do with cutting their feeding ranges. So I remember seeing a graph of a study done in the UK years ago of their pattern at night. And it was amazing to see it, because they follow the hedges.
Of course.
And that's where they feed along the hedges.
Yeah.
There was very few owls just floating across the middle of fields and that. So if you think about what the network of motorways has done, it's just cut all of that linear wildlife habitat. So I'm assuming that's what it is. And also, you know, that the roads may have impact on... Okay, we might have to come back to the barn owls again, will we?
That is pretty much it. We've run out of time in the kitchen garden for another week, and we hope that you have enjoyed the show. Remember, you can keep in touch with myself and Mags during the week on Twitter. I'm at NesbittF and Mags is at Mags Morrissey. Or you can email kitchengarden@crkc.ie. And you can listen to a podcast of this or any of the other shows by visiting thekitchengarden.ie. We'll be back on Community Radio Kilkenny City at the same time next week.